Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Elizabeth, hi.
Hello.
Phil, hi.
Hello, Brooke. I like your, do you call it a beanie or a stocking cap?
I'm Canadian, so it's a toque. No, I'm not Canadian.
You look good in it.
Thank you. Hi, Diane.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're doing well today. So it's fall where we live. It happened. We're here now. And we're really looking forward to today. We have a lot of fun stuff that we're about to talk about. Before we get in, I just want to say thank you to everybody who's listening, maybe on their way to school. School has started for most people, mm-hmm. or you're maybe taking a break from homeschooling, and for whatever reason, you decided to listen to us in the middle of that. So thank you for wherever you're listening. And if you haven't had a chance to rate or subscribe or leave a comment on any platform, whether that's podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, it just means the world to us and is so helpful if you would just rate the podcast and leave a comment. We want to talk about some stuff today around the pain of our time. You know, we all have different things that we're experiencing in this moment. Husbands and wives listening, parents, especially if you're talking about school and talk about homework. Elizabeth and I were just talking about a dynamic right before we started the podcast of just some of the idiosyncrasies that you have to deal with just one kid going through school and helping them navigate all the different things they need to balance and responsibility and all the opportunities that we get to teach our kids with that. But we also wanted to talk about a couple things that are really important to our time and specifically to marriages and parents. And I want to talk about the pleasure principle, and I want to talk about the idea of longing for another honeymoon. And so I know this hopefully teases your ears a little bit to go like, what do you mean? But we're going to get into that today. Before we do, is there anything else that anyone wanted to say before we get going? Any other thoughts on this before we get going?
Thoughts on what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, thoughts on what we're going to talk about, or anything you want to share before we go, because once we get into this, we're not going back. So we just got back from Nashville. We were in Nashville. We had a great time with the Awana crew. That was really amazing. Great. We had a great time. We love all those guys over there. And Elizabeth, thank you. So many people, when we travel without you, they're like, so is Elizabeth here? I'm always like, I'm sorry to disappoint you so highly.
I was home chauffeuring our kids. Everyone keeps asking, what'd you do while Brooke's out of town? It's like, I drove my kids
that
around.
Was a lot of driving.
I kept telling people who were asking where Elizabeth is and why she couldn't come or something. I kept saying, well, she's doing what
we're talking
about. Teaching about right here. Yes. She's actually the one doing it.
I was.
Yes.
I was.
So
thank you, Elizabeth, for doing what we're teaching about.
Oh, well.
But you know, it was great going to Nashville. Was for me, it it's so far away from home. I mean, it's really on the other side of the country for us, living in the Northwest, to get all the way across the United States. And all throughout the conference, I kept running into young moms, mostly, who were saying, oh, I just wanted to meet you. I listened to all your podcasts, and everybody said the same thing. I just I need encouragement.
Yeah.
I just am in real need of encouragement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just struck me again that this is the hardest job in the world to be a parent. Yeah. And the most important.
It is. And that's why we're about to launch Intentional Motherhood, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. And with a big conference happening, which everyone knows about, hopefully. And then, you know, there's going to be a lot more resources that I know we, mm-hmm. in the time to come, mm-hmm. provide for moms and dads and families. So I'm excited about that. Phil, did you have something real quick?
No, every time somebody says anything along the lines of it's the hardest job in the world, being a mom, and the most holy and high calling, I just want to shout and stand up like a standing ovation.
Yeah,
like it is. Because as far as God's concerned, there's no more important thing you could ever do, mm-hmm. than be a mom and lay down your life for your kids and raise them up. And we're old enough now to see the fruit of all that labor. Mm-hmm. And so, but it is hard. And I honor Diane. You know, I never heard Diane complain ever. And maybe inside she did a few times, but I didn't go through life raising our kids with a wife who was saying, oh, this is so hard. Oh, she just laid down her life for her kids. And now when we look at our four kids, there's one sitting right here, Elizabeth. And in our, you know, those who follow Intentional know her well. And a lot of people know who Joe Mark is. Not as many people know Rebecca and Matthew, but they're all walking with the Lord. And I attribute a ton of that to the grace of God.
Yeah.
All right. You know, the Apostle Paul said, I will presume to speak of nothing except what Christ has accomplished through me. So all the glory to the Lord that our kids are following him, that Elizabeth is sitting here, and I'm so proud of her. And she now is ministering to me and helping me think correct thoughts and pointing me towards the Lord, you know?
Yeah.
But I attribute so much of that to Diane and all the years of being a mom. And, you know, I think we're going to talk about that today, just that daily grind and how it can wear you out. And yet, if you have the right perspective, which is an eternal perspective, that's the first perspective we need. Hey, this is all about eternity.
Yes.
And then secondly, a long haul perspective, then it helps you in the day to day. So anyway.
Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. I'm not a complainer. I'm also not an external processor. So lots of complaining stays inside of me and ekes out of my pores in bad attitudes. But I do remember waking up in those early years and laying in bed and just feeling the dread of the day ahead of me. The same day exactly as the day before, and working so hard to put one foot in front of the other. So there's that. There is the reality of certain of those years facing hungry babies and crabby toddlers and arguing, and a lot of work is just hard.
Yeah, but you stayed in it.
I stayed in it.
So that's what I'm saying. You know, you had the grit, the perseverance, and the Lord helped you to stay in it. And I'm proud of you for that. And I attribute, I mean, John Mark says when he grows up, he wants to be like you. You know, he's longing for that peaceful presence that he sees in you, you know.
And one day he'll grow up, and we can't wait for that day. He's already grown. But I was going to say, you know, it's so funny, you know, Phil, you're talking about it. I agree that it's the personality, because Phil has a reputation around our house. I'm not going to say what it's for, but it might be for things like not enjoying certain kinds of weather and vocalizing that.
It's okay. You can be specific.
On a repeat way to where our kids go, Pops is complaining about the cold weather all the time, which was funny to me. But that said, I'm not even trying to point you out. I'm trying to say, I think it depends on your personality, because there could be a mom here listening going like, I have to tell my husband how hard this is, because if not, my brain's going to explode.
That's right.
You know, because that's how she, that's her disposition.
So some external processing, and in all honesty, is different than griping and complaining and moaning and groaning.
And grumbling.
And grumbling. That's the word.
Yeah, that's different. Verbal processors do need to be able to
have
a safe place where they can really explain how hard this is for them to grow up. You know, you're young when you're having your children. You haven't had a whole lot of experience, what Phil just called grit, of just that perseverance, you know, especially in America, of putting one foot in front of the other and doing it because it's the right thing to do. Well, in your 20s, even your early 30s, we just haven't had a lot of practice at that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Give yourself enough years and enough practice, and it just does not feel as hard as it did a long time ago. You do definitely build some muscle.
I'm thinking of, you said a verbal processor. I remember the day when, because Elizabeth is a introvert, some might say raging introvert. Yes. And when I realized the day that she was also a verbal processor and an introvert. And
funny combination.
That's
unexpected.
A tricky situation, everybody. So I was like, wait, you want to talk, but you don't want to, you don't want to be around me, but you want to talk to me. I can't figure this out.
Well, it was eye-opening for both of us.
It was for both of us,
I didn't
yes.
know that I was an external processor.
It was really interesting. Yeah, verbal processor. I mean, yes, more verbal.
External.
Yes.
I thought that I was not.
Yeah, I know.
It was when I was not able to run as much, though, because I used to run a lot, and I would like basically do all the pre-processing on a run and only need to verbally process just a tiny bit. And then I have not been able to run as much, and I have to verbally process a lot more.
I do like when you process with me. It was just like all of a sudden one day it showed up like all of a sudden you had another baby, and it was all your words. And it was like, I'm okay with this dynamic. I'm just so not used to this dynamic yet. What does this mean? So let's talk, you know, thinking about running and thinking about not getting to do all the things that you'd hope to do and kids and all of that. Let's talk about the pleasure principle. So, you know, in life, when we talk about marriage and we talk about kids, especially, there's this idea. I love the book. Elizabeth and I were just talking about it. The book Sacred Fire by Ronald Rollheiser. Mm-hmm. Such a great, helpful book. He just lays out this idea of the pleasure principle, which is not even his per se, but it's the idea that when we're younger, especially when we're usually young marrieds and having kids, we kind of base our life on the pleasure principle and this idea that our pleasure is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Rollheiser pointed out as well, which I also just like the language of it, is he said, we're often longing for another honeymoon. You get married, you go, you know, many people try to do a honeymoon. Phil and Dan, you remember your honeymoon?
Oh, absolutely.
Of course.
Yeah. So like, it's something that doesn't go away. It's always there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you have a story or like five stories.
Well, we're going back to Carmel, God willing, in a few weeks.
Actually, tell people about that. What you guys do still. I think that's beautiful. That just to remember the beauty of your honeymoon.
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free, thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all around the world that give monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just to a few dollars a month? Thank you so much, and may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. And if you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
Well, yeah. So we had a beautiful honeymoon in Carmel, California. It's our romance spot right on the Pacific Ocean. Mm-hmm. And when we got married in 1978, you could get a fireplace room.
With a fireplace in it. Yeah.
Overlooking the Pacific Ocean for $82 a night.
That was 82. Yeah.
That of course, was I was making hardly any money.
So that was still
it's
expensive.
All relative.
Yeah, yeah.
But now it's much more expensive. But we save our money up and we try to get down there at least once a year for at least a couple nights.
That's great.
And we've built memories upon memories upon memories. And it's, you know, it's our romance spot. Mm-hmm. And we love it there. And we used to, you know, live close when we lived in the Bay Area. It was an hour and 15-minute drive. Now we need to fly down or do a really long drive down. But it's an investment in our marriage. Yeah.
And it reminds us of other times. And it reminds us of how much we love each other. Even in the midst of the stress of real life, it's always good to have reminders. Oh, we don't just do work together.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is romance. This is an important part of our
and
lives.
I think the fact that we are still working together, we love mm-hmm. what we do. We're called to ministry. I mean, when we, our first date, we both felt called to vocational ministry. Now we've been married 45 years, but now we're working side by side doing intentional, and you guys are too. And so yeah. it doesn't work to be like, did you do that? Did you do that? Did you print this? Did you edit this? Workers by day, lovers by night. You know? So
yeah. So if you think about prayer for intentional, pray for our marriage.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So you know, we have our moments.
Sure.
Every yes. marriage does, but we've been married 45 years, and we're both can't wait to get to Carmel.
Oh yeah.
So the yeah. on the point of the honeymoon, and why I'm it highlighting is. This is simply because. Those are usually these heaven on earth moments.
Yes.
You know, it's mm-hmm. like they're set up so you have money, hopefully, to pay for the trip. And they're these beautiful experiences. It's for many people, it's like, whoa, the first time you're jumping into this whole idea of marriage and what does that mean to unite your life with somebody else? And like all of a sudden, it's all these new things right at the first. And how often we get a little taste of heaven on our way to heaven. It's a little slice of heaven. And so often with the pleasure principle, we're constantly trying to get back to that. You know, we're constantly trying to go back, but life doesn't.
But you can't live there. We can't live in Carmel.
I know.
Nor should we.
Nor should we.
But it wouldn't even be fulfilling to just live there and it's just about us and our relationship. You know, it wouldn't satisfy in the way that you would think it would.
And so that's the
part
thing,
of life.
It's, and that's the thing I want to highlight is that so many people live with that. Maybe you're even listening to this and this whole idea of the pleasure principle is new for you. But maturity is where we're all moving. That's where Jesus is moving all of us. And your life is moving you there. Your kids are moving there. Your marriage is moving you there. But one of the things that usually stunts our growth is this idea that what we need for our pleasure is the most important. And the Bible has so much to say about that not being reality. But our goal is to move from that pleasure principle to maturity. And we're going to talk about some of that today. How do we move from that? Because a lot of the times when we live in that space of the pleasure principle being the most important, our kids' needs, our spouse's needs, what's going on in our life, if it takes away from our happiness, we become angry. Mm-hmm. And a lot of infidelity, actually, Rollheiser writes a lot about this in another book. He has a couple other books, but he talks about this idea that a lot of infidelity stems from this place of chasing that second honeymoon, mm-hmm. of trying of
thrill.
The thrill. You love what happened on that honeymoon as an idea so much that you just want to get back to it constantly and realizing that's a beautiful moment. Like you said, Phil, the perspective, it's a moment, but it's not your whole life. It can't be.
No.
And that you're not going to have that in the same way, but there's so much beauty along the way.
Don't you think this has to do a lot about what Jesus talked about being satisfied? Hmm. And you know, on your honeymoon is about being satisfied in every way, relationally, emotionally, physically, sexually. But is there a way to be satisfied in the dailiness of life when we're not on the honeymoon, we're not living in Carmel on the cliff of an ocean, when we're just doing what needs to be done that day. Mm. There's several Psalms that I love. Psalm 107 verse 9 says, He, God, satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. And Mary, when she was realizing that she was about to endure quite a trial by going through with the pregnancy of Jesus, Son of God, and the misunderstanding would come, she quotes that psalm. But she says it in this really positive, hope-filled way. She's just heard what's going to happen. She hasn't even hardly had time to process it. And she said, He has, like, He's already done it. He has filled the hungry with good things. It's like she got it. She really had a trust in God that even though she was about to do something really hard, and she didn't even know how hard it would be, that she really trusted in God that He fills the hungry with good things. So in the pleasure principle, I think we're hungry for a sense of rush or a sense of satisfaction that will always elude us. I mean, we, like very many couples do, got in a big fight on our honeymoon. Like our first fight was our honeymoon.
I can't believe
I don't even remember what it's about, but it just shows you that. It's not as satisfying. Nothing is as satisfying.
Oh, no. And we had to come home early because you got sick.
I did. I got sick. So
it's not heaven until heaven.
I think
heaven.
What he's talking about here, the psalmist is realizing that if you're thirsty and hungry for God, then you're going to be satisfied.
Yeah.
But if you're thirsty and hungry for your own pleasure, you're going to be disappointed time and time and time mm-hmm. again. You'll have some moments of, oh, that was better than I imagined. But most of your moments are going to be less than.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. Satisfaction in Jesus is a huge part of what we're talking about.
Well, I think... I'm sure we're going to get into this, right? Talking about perspective.
Yes, we are.
You know, and I think that, you know, we've been made for eternity. Mm-hmm. You know, before sin came, Adam and Eve would have been in the Garden of Eden with the Lord talking, being with them constantly. That's mm-hmm. where we're headed.
Yes.
We're headed to be with the Lord forever and ever. And when you were talking, Diane, you said ultimately it's in Christ that we our deepest soul is satisfied. And, you know, Psalm 16:11, in your presence is fullness of yeah. joy. At your right hand, there are pleasures forever. There's the word pleasures right there in Psalm 16:11. Mm. So the it's in the presence of God that we find a deep joy that we can't find anywhere else. And one day we're going to experience that constantly with the Lord. In a perfect place, no more sin, no more sorrow, no more crying, no more pain. But right now, it's not heaven until heaven. And so, but, you know, we have to remember that in him, I'm going to find a true joy, a joy that the world can't give.
And that is, I think, where the spiritual disciplines, the spiritual rhythms of life come into being. If we aren't throughout the day filling up on that satisfaction that only he can give, either through, like, you know, starting your morning with the morning quiet time in the word and worship, or putting on music, or going on a worship walk, or the things that we need to do to recognize that he satisfies us
yes.
in the middle of our sometimes not satisfying days. Mm. I think we have to just build those kind of moments into our day so that we aren't just a drudge putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at Psalm 16 here. It's only got 11 verses. That was the last verse. But before that, that's exactly what David's doing. He's saying, yeah. Lord, I take refuge in you. You're my portion. Yeah. You're my inheritance. You support me. The yeah. lions have fallen to me in pleasant places. Yeah. I bless the Lord who has counseled me. My mind instructs me in the night. You know, he's just basking
yeah.
his life. He's just thinking about how when his life is saturated in God,
yeah.
he has this deep joy. And
yes,
pleasures
he was king. So yes. he also had incredible amount of, I would assume, administrative duties and constant conflict he was dealing with, mm. not unlike those of us who have real lives.
So that's kind of what I wanted to even lead to, is recognizing that the pleasure principle is a place of the immature. It's a place of somebody yeah. who is living in a spot of not mm-hmm. understanding the grandness that Jesus wants to invite us into. And if you're hearing that today and you're like, I live out of the pleasure principle, that's okay. Like that's, mm-hmm. it's okay for you to acknowledge where you're at. We're going to talk about that. But one of those demons that you have to wrestle with is, after you make this lifelong commitment to another person, is you're going to have to deal with that powerful temptation to want to experience another honeymoon in the same way, but you're going to try to do it with all the pressures of life and kids and the monotony that comes in the middle of ages. You know, it's really interesting how many people we end up talking to. And obviously you have your high capacity people who are doing a lot, but there's a lot of these middle years that are, yeah. Yeah. they're confined. They're, don't tell our kids, they're boring. They're,
yeah.
they're very regimented. Now they're beautiful and they're fun and they're rich. But if we're all also being honest, there's like this task, there's a responsibility. It reminds me of the story of Martha, right? Martha and Mary. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, when we think about Martha, one of her, the things that came out of her was resentment. She had resentment of this duty mm-hmm. and it led to this joylessness, almost bordering on anger. Mm-hmm. That idea of resentment and of duty and a joylessness bordering on anger is a great phrase that I think describes a lot of people in our current moment. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people where they're at in their parenting journey, maybe, where it's like, I am just overwhelmed and frustrated. And there's this resentment growing towards the responsibilities of life. there's a joylessness and you're bordering on anger. It's so funny. I was telling you guys before, and if any listener wants to know, the most downloaded episodes that we have are ones on anger. Anytime we talk about anger, people, it's amazing. That tells us, what does that tell us? It tells us that a lot of people are where we can be, which is angry at times, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a really interesting perspective to have. How do we get from that place of resentment and joylessness? And how do we move beyond ourselves so that we can actually experience this maturity and move from that place of Martha and Mary? I'd love to talk a little bit about the Mary and Martha thing, but thoughts on that before we keep moving.
Well, I just think it's such a natural byproduct of, you know, with the whole idea of the pleasure principle and even thinking of like Eve in the Garden of Eden, like thinking that real life, because she was being deceived by the enemy, that real, the good life came on the other side of her eating the fruit, which was the exact opposite of what was on the other side of that. And I think same thing when we're searching for our own happiness, our own pleasure, when we're searching for the second honeymoon, thinking that it's going to be the thing that brings us happiness, it brings us the exact opposite, because every interruption from our kids, all the years of monotony, the little years, the toddler years into the grade school years where parenting just shifts and it's a different kind of monotonous. And then it just brings about all of that anger and resentment, and all those things become, they feel like interruptions versus actually the thing that, if we let the interruptions come and let them form us, it actually creates the life we want, but not in the way that we thought.
Yeah.
The life that we want. I think that's really important, because I think the Bible more addresses not our own happiness or pleasure so much as, but it really does. Jesus talked a lot about our own flourishing.
Yeah.
And he wasn't saying you're going to flourish if you can save up enough money to go to Hawaii or to go someplace great. It was flourishing in the midst of a depressed economy,
blessed are the poor,
oppressive government.
Yeah.
We can't just keep running away from where we actually are.
Yeah.
There must be a flourishing in the midst of where we are. And I think there's all sorts of factors. It's not like we can follow 10 steps. And it's a little individualistic too. You know, sometimes we have to just get creative. But most often, I think we just have to live out of a posture of honest to goodness, gratefulness to God. I mean, I remember talking to an older person once who just blurted out after lots and lots of other complaining, why did I have to get old? And my first response was, because you didn't die young. That's what I mean, think of all the people, all the moms who have known that they were going to leave their children through some sort of illness before it was their time, how thankful they would be
to if be old.
They got to be old and creaky knees and, you know, wobbly chins and all the things that come with age. I mean, they're just signs that we got to live old.
Wobbly
so
chins.
Much is it. Well, that's my thing lately, is the neck thing. It's like, oh man, is there a neck lift? No, I don't think
I'm
so.
I'm sure there Probably. Is. I'm sure there is.
I'm sure there is, but
we have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
You know, the Mary and Martha thing is huge. It's actually a great illustration of this, because Martha was a good person and she opened her home to Jesus, the Messiah.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I'm looking at it here in Luke 10. And it's her home, and Jesus comes into her home, and her sister Mary was there.
Yes.
And Mary, every time you see Mary three times, she's always seated she's always at the Lord's feet. In John, it's for comfort because her brother's died, and later it's for worship, and here it's for instruction. It says she was listening. Mary, her sister, is listening to the Lord's word seated at his feet, and then Martha gets mad because she's obviously preparing a meal for him. Mm-hmm. Tell my sister to come help me. And he doesn't say, yeah, Mary, get up and go help her. He says, you're worried and bothered. And it says Martha was distracted with all her preparations. So basically, I think the Lord wanted time with Martha. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he enjoyed her cooking. Of course he did. But he wanted time with her and he loved his time with Mary. And then he goes on to say, Mary has chosen the important part that will not be taken away from her. Cause you know, she was sitting at his feet, just soaking up the goodness of the Lord. And he says that was the most important thing. So I think it's perspective. And I think that Martha got caught up in something that was important, but not as important. Hmm.
You said the word distracted. That's a word that we throw around a lot these days. I wonder how much distraction feeds into our sense of discontent and disappointment. And now it's so easy to distract ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, we carry around a device everywhere we go that shows us the glitz and glamour of unreal lives. So I'm wondering how much distraction.
We're sitting here in our open kitchen area. I'm just thinking, this just hit me. Like, let's say Jesus is over there by the fireplace talking to somebody. And I'm like not hearing what he's saying because I'm making coffee or something. But then you think, like, if Jesus actually came to your house, would you want to, like, sit down with them and, like, this is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what Jesus was trying to say. Come over here.
Yeah.
You know, and let me talk to you.
The distraction.
If she was distracted by her preparations, it's actually in here, it's much service. So she was doing a good thing.
High capacity person
doing a good thing.
But I'm thinking about moms and dads. They're usually doing good things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's this like resentment almost built in because they're having to do the thing. They want to spend time with Jesus, right? Like, I talk to friends constantly. I just don't know how to fit in time with Jesus. Like, I'm sacrificing for my family so much. It's really hard to have even time to care for myself. Now I can totally relate. Mm-hmm. And understand and get that, I mean, more than you know. At the same time, it's that realization that if you don't get in touch with that, it's the same story. It's, I mean, when you realize, like, replace Mary or Martha with you and your spouse. Mm-hmm. I even think the word distraction is interesting with your kids. How often are you being Martha and your kids are like Jesus or like Mary saying, would you just stop doing all that stuff and just come over here? Like, thank you for doing that stuff. It matters. And of course, there's responsibility. We get all that. I'm not saying to not do that. I'm saying, though, how often could our kids use the not Martha version of ourselves and give us their attention? Mm-hmm. We can give them our attention. And instead, we often can become so distracted by these things. And Jesus is just inviting you over. Like, come. Yeah. I can take care of this stuff. The message, actually, I looked this version, verse 41 and 42, the master, Jesus said, Martha, dear Martha, you're fussing far too much and you're getting yourself worked up over nothing. One thing is essential and Mary has chosen it. It's the main course and it won't be taken from her.
That's beautiful.
So
that speaks to simplicity too, that just like simplifying our lives so that we can experience the pleasures that come from good relationships, from going on a walk outside and noticing the beauty and filling ourselves up. It's not like we're supposed to be just these drudges who just work, and we're supposed to be happy on top of that. Yes. I think we have to make room for the right kind of pleasure in our lives.
But I think that's a really good observation. And I would add to that, it's important for you to figure out what brings you pleasure. Mm-hmm. Because I think what happens is a lot of people will hear Diane, who they listen to and they love, go, she loves walks. Well, I should love walks too.
Go outside. Yeah. Everything is
like,
for me.
I hate outside. Maybe they're like Phil. We're like, no way. Unless it's 72, I'm not going out there. That's not you. But you know what I mean? Like that idea, what is the thing that truly brings you joy? Not just what somebody who has a microphone in front of their face says prescribes joy. And I'm not saying, and I'm more with you. Going on a walk, that brings me a lot of refreshment and recentering. But I talk to so many people, like the idea of waking up early and reading the Bible, like that overwhelms me. It's like, okay, well, what truly allows you to connect with God? Taking permission to not just take what's been prescribed to you by a person that has influenced you, Who are you? How are you actually made? What brings you true pleasure? And then what is actually connecting with God? Because I think that's also another thing is we sometimes will do the things out of religious duty. And Jesus is like, why are you doing that? Like, I just want to talk with you and connect with you. Like, there's a lot more freedom, I think, than we sometimes give ourselves. Right. So,
on the other hand, I also think that most good things in our life start with discipline, at least for me. I have to drum up the discipline to just make myself do certain things. Like
cold plunges.
Sometimes making cold plunging. It's not on my even on my list of things I need to do.
I would love to get you to do a cold plunge. Oh, that would be so fun. What Phil's just laughing.
You're looking at her, not terrible. Me.
Cold plunging is not a spiritual discipline, but it is bodily discipline. But you say
it helps me with the others.
You're trying to get me to do the cold plunge thing because you say it makes you feel so good and bright and alert.
Oh, sure.
So there it is. You start with the discipline of cold plunge.
Yeah.
And you end with this pleasurable feeling that enables you to get back in the next time a little easier and a little easier and a little easier. And I wouldn't really know about that because I have no intention.
But Elizabeth has been doing it too. I've been so proud of her. It's not an easy deal.
Terrible.
But
it's the literal worst.
But it helps you.
But it does. Scarlett will literally stand. We've been using our bathtub because we don't want to buy a $4,000 cold plunge. Why are they so ridiculously expensive?
Oh, it's the moment in time.
But we've been using our bathtub and ice the old fashioned way. And Scarlett will literally stand over me and just say, "It's for your health, Mom. For your health. For your health. For your health."
Yeah, she's so funny.
She's like my cheerleader. But I've been doing it. But I think, you know, back to, you know, we're really talking about simplicity and noticing when it comes to like what brings you joy. And when it comes to Martha and Mary, like Mary just sitting at the feet of Jesus. I think it's harder now than ever because we're so distracted because there's dopamine hits left and right that aren't coming from things like a walk in nature or just sitting and being with somebody. I think we have to retrain, to your point, Mom, like starts as a discipline, retrain ourselves to like going for a walk and to find the joy in that and to take a minute. And what is that? What's it called when you like take a minute to make a mental... take like a mental picture. What's it called? It's called something.
Oh, yeah. John Mark talks about it sometimes.
Oh, something memory.
Well,
basically, it's kind of to make a core memory, but it's a different word.
Sure.
Where you just basically sit in it for a minute and allow it to like penetrate your body and your mind so that it's something that you, a place you go back to basically in your body and your mind. I think in our time, we have to force ourselves into those rhythms. I don't think we're going to always want to because there's things that are quicker and like momentary pleasure, but aren't actually lasting joy.
Yeah.
And there's a difference. And I think that's what we're trying to lean into. It's like, what if, you know, we see all over the scripture, like what is God's kingdom? It's an upside down kingdom. It's the opposite of what the world says will bring you joy and happiness. And what if the interruptions, the middle years, the mundane, what if they're actually have the potential to create in you something so much more fulfilling and joyful than chasing the second honeymoon? And I think that is, you know, we talk so much about Ronald Wolheiser. This is like his episode, but Domestic Monastery and how he talks about parenthood is formation. Parenting is formation.
Oh, hugely.
And it's forming you in such a beautiful and intimate way if you let it versus if you just resist it constantly and grow more angry and more bitter, which seeps out on our kids and our spouse, even if we don't want it to. It just does. But if we could notice the beauty in it, it changes our whole perspective, which I know we're going to talk about.
And then we grow more and more happy.
Yes.
We find pleasure in more and more things. So it's the opposite. It's the, like you said, the upside down kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's discipline involved, but the discipline should give way fairly quickly to what we really desire.
Yeah.
And the delight and the joy. And I do think our devices work against us in that. So that's one thing we have to be really careful about. Just
So well, with what everyone's saying, which is beautiful, I'm thinking what would be helpful is to even just take a second to move. Let's talk about just four practical things, because we're highly, highly practical people. And we want to not only leave you with some encouragement, but also some practical help to know, like, okay, what are some of the things that you as a human, a husband, a wife, a couple right now listening, what could you do? And we want to talk just for briefly four things: how to move towards maturity and away from that pleasure principle. How can we move towards maturity? The invitation of Jesus to Mary. How can we move towards that to have the perspective? Because even socially, you know, what's so funny is, you know, socially, people are praised for being Martha. You get praised for being the Martha. You get praised for absolutely. Overwork.
Yeah.
You get praised in our culture. So people will be more annoyed with you for acting like Mary than they will be for you acting like Martha, if that makes sense. Addicted to work is one of those, work addiction as an example, is one of those things
that— success addiction.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's the one addiction that no one's going to fault you for. They praise you for. And so it's a really tricky thing, but for you to be aware of it. So the first thing to move towards maturity, the invitation— to move towards maturity and away from the pleasure principle is first just acknowledge your disappointment. Were you disappointed? I mean, I remember when I first read even this book, but other ideas about stage theory and realizing that in your 20s, you're so disconnected often from who you actually are that you have these dreams that are so grandiose of yourself, that your 30s is disappointment in the fact that most of those things are never going to come to be.
You're not as great as you thought you were.
In this picture, in this vision, and people with really great imaginations even have a, I think, even a further place to fall because they have these real big ideas of what's going to happen. And then they get into real life and it's really humbling. It's really challenging. And there's a lot of disappointment. I think if you don't acknowledge your disappointment that maybe I'm not who I thought I was in that, or even acknowledging the fact that the family that you have is both beautiful, but maybe very challenging at the moment, you know? So things like that. A couple thoughts on that before we go to the second one.
Yeah, I just think naming is huge. I think so often we're resenting and maybe angry and have like the low simmering anger, but we don't even slow down enough to know why. I mean, this happens to all of us. And if we can just stop and just be a little introspective and just ask, you know, your favorite question, Mom, what's this about? Asking the Lord, what's this about? But I think just taking the time to figure out what it is we're upset about. And I think, you know, for some people, they're maybe afraid to do that and afraid that they'll get stuck there. But I think it's the exact opposite. It ends up being incredibly freeing because you can't move on from it until you acknowledge that there's an it, you know? Yeah. That maybe motherhood is not what you thought it was going to be. And maybe marriage is not what Disney movies said it was going to be. And
sweetheart, that's not true. This is magical. You have never been disappointed.
Never.
Acknowledge your disappointment. He's sitting next to me.
I think it's important once you acknowledge it, it's what you do with it. To ask the question is good.
Yes.
You know, you just made me think of—
yeah, give me more
of
that.
Well, you made me think of Genesis 4, where God says to Cain, why are you angry? Why is your countenance fallen? So God cares about feelings. So he's, but he's trying to get Cain to where he should be.
He's trying to get Cain to think about it.
That's so he asks him, why are you angry and why is your countenance fallen? And he says, if you do well, your countenance will be lifted up. So God wants him to do well. And then he says this thing, sin is crouching at the door and its desires for you, but you must master it. So I think that, you know, I think that once we acknowledge the feeling, it's what do we do with it? Am I going to just like wallow in my, you know, disappointment and I can't do this, I can't do that, I want to do that, I don't get to do that.
Wow.
And then just go into a, just a, it'll just go into a deeper, deeper hole instead of saying, wow, is it really supposed to be all about me? I mean, Diane gave me a book not too long ago and I started reading it. I never finished it, but it's really good. It's just called It's Not About Me. Okay. And I think in America, really, it's all about leisure and it's all about pleasure. It's all about, we have too much free time. And you say, I don't have any free time. No, actually, compared to
most people,
some of the places in the world where it's, you know, they're trying to get enough food to eat tonight, right? And so I just feel like, it's perspective. It's perspective. And so God asks, he's trying to help Cain with his perspective here. And there's a whole lot to that story. But
but I think Elizabeth is right. First, we have to just speak it out loud, just see it. But I think you do that with the Lord. I think you bring it to him and you say, this part of my life is really disappointing. And or this part of my life is boring or... I don't like all the conflict this stage of my life with my kids is. It's taking all the joy out of my days.
Yeah.
And ask him, what does he want? What does he want to form in me? What is he doing in my life to get me past this hurdle, to get me to the point where I can find joy, even in the midst of difficult circumstances? You know, that was Paul. He's in prison when he writes the epistle of Philippians. Yeah. Which is all about joy in difficult circumstances. So it's possible. We know it's possible. And there are constant beckonings by the Spirit and invitations from him saying, come on, this is the way of joy. In this fallen world, his is the way of joy. And I think he's constantly trying to prick our imaginations so that we'll listen to him and look to see what's he inviting us into. And it might be some really simple pleasures like we talked about. And it might be a radical transformation of your mind. And it might be making some big changes because you realize, oh, I've just lost control over these areas of my life and they're making me miserable and I need to get on top of it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's your kids are arguing constantly because you are not drumming up the energy to help them actually learn godly ways of working through conflict. Mm. And so it's just going to get worse and worse and worse because all you're doing is saying, stop it, instead of actually doing talking the work. Some of these things are, you have to ask yourself also, what do I have control over?
Yeah.
Is there something I can do about this circumstance? So it's not like just laying down and being passive.
No.
I think it's asking God, am I doing all I could be doing in this situation?
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking this might be under another point.
What is it about? If it is, I'll tell you and we'll go
Let me just say what my thought is. And then if you say save it, I'll save it.
Okay.
Each stage in life has its own hardships.
Yeah.
But each stage in life has its own joys.
Mm.
And
I don't know
is that under another point? Because if not, I want to say something here.
It's not. Say something. Yeah.
Well, like we're coming home from the Awana conference that we got to be part of. And we landed in Denver and we had a long layover in Denver. We were there for a long time talking and everything. And then you got a call from Scarlett, I think, first. Like,
yes.
Are you bringing me something? And then Birdie got on the phone, right?
Yep, she did.
And I was listening to that, wishing I was a young dad again, because I remember I was traveling a ton when Matthew was, you know, 3, 4, 5. And I loved bringing him something.
Yeah.
And I had the same conversation. Matthew's 31 now. He doesn't call me, hey, Dad, are you bringing me something from your trip? You know? He doesn't do that anymore. But back then,
he did.
And Beanie Babies were in. And they weren't that expensive, you know? And there were all these different ones, you know? So he was like 5 or something.
Yeah.
And then if I went to England, I'd get him a candy bar that you could only get in England, you know?
Yeah.
And I had so much fun getting that gift.
Yes.
You know, and I was just laughing because, you know, you're traveling a lot now. So they're expecting like something big. And you said, well, you know what? I'm traveling a lot now. It's going to be small.
Yeah.
And so
Dad can't bring you. Dad's budget can't bring you something every
so trip. You got to meet some lifesavers.
Yeah.
Okay. So but so I was looking at that and I told you, I think I told you,
you did.
I said, I miss those years when I because I could have tried to overdo you. Like, okay, I'm going to bring up something too. No, this is your role. You're the father. And yes, I like to spoil them too when they're over at my house. But this was you coming home. They couldn't wait for Dad to be home. And you get to bring this gift. So you're in their mind. They're going to remember this. My dad comes home and he brings us a present for me.
And it's fun.
And it was fun. That. It was. I had a blast doing that. Not just for him. And then that season's gone now. I mean, and so I feel like that's a joy you have right now. But then you have a lot of hardships that you have right now.
Yeah, that's right. You came home and they're all excited to see you. We came home and our dog was excited to see us.
Well, the best part.
Nobody else missed
us. Much less needy.
I walked into the door and because of when we got home, it was like just, you know, late enough for them to stay up a little late. But it wasn't crazy late. So they were still, Sloan had fallen asleep. But Duke and Scarlett and Birdie were all up and they come and see me and, you know, so I give I give them all their lifesavers and they're so happy. And Birdie gets in bed and she's holding her lifesaver. This is a pack of lifesavers, everybody. You would think I'm a superhero by how they felt. These were $2 each. I'm telling you, it was not a sacrifice of finance or even thoughtfulness on my part. But it was so interesting. So I'm putting Birdie to bed and Sloan, they have a bunk bed. So Sloan hears kind of Birdie talking to me and she wakes up and she had a sleep mask on, which I've never seen her have, which was hilarious, by the way. So she's like a 40-year-old woman.
Dollar bins.
She just takes off her sleep mask, which was comical. And then she's like, "Dad, is that you?" I was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "I got you something." And I mean, just probably one of the sweetest things. Oh, Scarlett walked in. Hi, Scar. Hi, sweetie. It was one of the sweetest things because she ended up, you know, being so grateful in that little moment. She like held her lifesaver and it was worth every moment. But what was so funny is the next morning she wakes up and she walks into my room and she hands me this thing. She's like, "Dad, I had this weird dream. You came in and you handed me this lifesaver. Was that a dream? Was that real?" I was like, "Sweetie."
She was holding the lifesaver. Yeah, these are real lifesavers.
This is real, sweetie.
You know, I wrote down, "Thank God for what you do have instead of what you don't have."
Yes.
The season you are in, not the season you wish you were in. Mm, you know, and it's like, so Diane, good. I mean, how many times did you see mom saying, "Oh, I just can't wait till school starts to get these kids out of here," or "I can't wait till these kids grow up and are gone. And then years later, they go,
"I wish they were here.
I wish, remember when we had little kids?" You know, it's like, you can go through life that way.
Yeah.
Oh. And none of us do it perfectly. I mean, I'm of the two of us, I can grumble and complain way more than Diane. I have to deal with this, but I'm trying to enjoy every season. And I think that's perspective. So once you acknowledge your feelings, then you have to decide what you're going to do with them, what perspective you're going to have.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here, there's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers.
I think that's so true, Dad. And I, at least in our own journey, like a lot of you know our story, but the last 7 years have just been kind of big disappointment after disappointment in a lot of ways, of just major health challenges with two of our kids and with myself, and just a lot of learning to grieve. And I think I love what you're saying, Dad, and I think it's so true. And I think the journey, at least that we've been on in the last 7 years, of you can't even press into the joy and the hope unless you acknowledge the disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Like acknowledging the disappointment is, at least for us, has been like the gateway to the joy.
Yeah.
And learning to do it again and again. Like now it just looks like, it used to be just this overwhelming grief and just feeling like this heavy weight of it. And now it will just come up ever so often at a random surprising time. And I will usually just have to say to Brooke, "I'm just feeling a lot today about all of this. I don't need you to do anything. I don't need to talk about it. I just need to say out loud that I'm grieving a lot today."
Yeah.
And then with that, I'm freed to be able to notice all the beauty that's come from the last 7 years. I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's brought so much beauty. I mean, we're sitting in church yesterday. singing Waymaker, which the first time I heard that song was right after Birdie.
Make all of us cry. Don't do this.
I'm going to cry. I know. It was right after Birdie was diagnosed. I think it was my first time back at church.
Yes.
And she wasn't with me because she was immunocompromised.
Yes.
And I'm trying to sing that song. I'm bawling my eyes out, like mm-hmm. wanting to believe that God is the way maker, a miracle worker, promise keeper, but feeling like I'm not even sure if he is. Like, and then I'm fast forward 7 years later and I'm sitting next to Birdie, who's singing that song in church yesterday. And I'm just bawling my eyes out for a totally different reason, yes. you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the beauty that comes from when you're not afraid to just face it and say, yeah, this is hard. And it's also a gift. Yeah. It's both. Mm. Yeah. And so I just think perspective is really literally
perspective's
everything.
Huge. And we're about to go to the second point, but Scarlett did walk in and I did want to ask you a question. Are you okay to answer a question on the podcast?
Yes.
Okay. So we were talking about when the silly things I bring you back sometimes, like lifesavers. Can you describe as a child from your perspective, whatever words you want, and please just be honest because I'm asking you randomly. What does that make you feel? Even if it's big or little, like is it, describe to me like what that means for you as a kid. Go ahead. Try to get close to this mic.
I think it kind of is like, I don't know, like it makes me feel loved and just like excited. I don't know, like sometimes it's just like, you know, when you're coming home, I love to stay up anyways. But then when you tell us all, I'll bring you back something, me and my little sisters, we go crazy. So I feel like it's kind of, yeah, we do go crazy. But I think it's kind of just like, it makes me feel like loved and seen. And I love it when like you get us all, like, you know, sometimes when you'll get us all different things and they're all things that like, that we all specifically like.
Unique to you.
Yeah, unique to each person. And I think, it just makes me feel kind of loved.
That's great. That's very kind. I'm really glad to hear that. And I'm asking simply because I didn't know. And I was like, well, you're here. I guess I should just ask the source and you could tell us. I also think that's interesting. I learned something new, that the individual, that's good to know. So it could be lifesavers or something even better.
Small or big doesn't matter.
Did you hear that, honey? We're just going to save so much money. I'm just kidding. Thank you, Scarlett. I appreciate that. That's Scarlett. Thank you. I know I didn't plan that. So thank you for stepping on and saying hi. So acknowledge your disappointment. You're not my disappointment, yeah. Scarlett, by the way. That wasn't my point.
You know what Elizabeth is saying is real. When there's trauma with a capital T,
yeah,
you know, it takes a lot of depth to really rejoice in the midst of it. You know, Paul did. He was in prison. Mm. He was beaten. He was shipwrecked. I mean, he went through a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And thinking of others and writing a letter to the churches while he's in prison. Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah,
and so he's saying rejoice. So it can be done, but I think that's when praise becomes a sacrifice.
Yeah. Mm.
It's easy to say, well, I'm in Maui. Well, I'm Maui, the fire, maybe not Maui. I'm in San Diego and it's 70 degrees and I'm on the beach and I'm in this nice place.
Yes.
And praise Jesus, you know, but it's a sacrifice when you're doing it in the midst of illness and something hard.
But I also think we need to be patient with ourselves in this. Mm-hmm. This is a skill, an acquired skill that takes hours and hours of practice. Sure. The goal is that by the time I'm a very old lady, I'm just exuding joy in a natural way. It's coming natural, instinctive to me.
Sure.
But in the process of getting there is, I think we have to be patient with ourselves and realizing, I mean, I think it took me almost 20 years before I could actually thank God for losing my hearing. I mean, before that, I could thank him for lots of little steps along the way. But
years,
I remember kind of waking up and realizing about 20 years in, oh, I actually feel thankful. Mm. And that was many, many steps of saying, I'm trusting God that this terrible thing is actually at some point going to be a blessing in my life and the lives of others. Mm. But I just think if we tell ourselves we have to get there immediately, we're going to fake it until we make it. And that does not work.
Yeah,
I think it's just be patient. Some life is not supposed to be this way. This is not the world that God created us for. The fall really happened. And we live with the ramifications of that and the disappointments and the boringness and the the unpleasurable parts of it. We live with that every day. So yeah. I think mm-hmm. it's okay for us to say, okay, this is really hard. And I'm aiming towards thankfulness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And God will undertake for me at some point. He's going to do that for me. And then it is really crazy how you can wake up and say, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I really am. I'm there.
You're there. Yeah. So acknowledge. That's beautiful. Yeah. I love how you just said that. Mm-hmm. The second thing, and we'll move through these last ones pretty quickly, but remember hope. Remember that there's hope. Two things I just want to add to this really quick. I was talking to somebody this week and they said, just in passing it just stuck out to me so richly. It was, we often don't talk to our kids anymore about the reality of heaven. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that's a very true point. That is more of an undertone now than mm-hmm. an overtone. Now there's overtones where that's it can true. Become like, I think there's balance with all of it.
Yeah.
Heaven's beautiful, but it's also a real, real part of the kingdom of God. Mm-hmm. And how much is our perspective, even as adults now, but also with our kids and where our kids are at, that this world is all you have to live for in a lot mm-hmm. of their narratives.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, what a sad, completely constrictive, overwhelming thought that when we remember that this life is hard, but there's healing, that this life is overwhelming, but there's a moment in time where that's not always the case. Even just that on a mental, psychological level can be such
so helpful
a gift. And then the second thing I want to say with that perspective is I think having people that are further down the line than you, mm-hmm. mentors, mm-hmm. Family, if you can trust them, if it's a good situation, to give you the perspective. And the reason I think about this is today I was talking to our friend who's been on the podcast, Jerry Sitzer. He's a great friend. Yeah. And I've asked him to just talk on a regular basis. He's a mentor of sorts. And I have to tell you, every time I talk to, and this is the same with you, Phil, that's why I love hanging out with you. I actually do like hanging out with you, by the way.
I like hanging out with you too.
But that said, it gives me a level of perspective and understanding that I can't access any other way. I can't mm-hmm. I can't fast track this stuff. I can't mm-hmm. I can't share a real time situation with someone my age and they can give me the same perspective as someone like Jerry and or someone like Phil. And also these people that are also in the same kind of veins or understanding of life. And so I just think like when I talk to a guy like Jerry as an example, or I talk to Phil, what ends up happening is they understand my world, they understand my life, my vocation, and they can speak to the whole of my person, uh-huh. which gives me so much hope.
It does.
Just all to say, like it helps the whole monotony or the desire to honestly be tempted to become angry. It really does help that perspective. So remembering hope.
Yeah, hope and the hope of heaven is part of it.
Yes.
We're going to be with the Lord forever. And right now we have assigned tasks. Hmm. And every parent, part of your assigned tasks is your children to raise them up so they can be in heaven with you for all eternity. Hmm. And that's going to be perfect. And, it affects everything. Like, I love to travel, but, I don't care. You could travel full time until you die and you're still not going to see everything in this earth. Hmm. But Diane said to me one time, like, well, if it's this earth, this that's going to be renewed, which it okay. is. Mm-hmm. And I never made it to Switzerland. Actually, I have been to Switzerland, but I never made it
Norway?
To Norway.
There you go.
I could go see Norway.
Exactly.
During the millennium.
Exactly. That is so exciting.
Or whatever. Right. And so it just changes everything.
It does.
Yes.
And I'm preparing my kids, and there's a definite connection. This is another podcast topic, I guess, but between this life and the life to come.
Yes.
He was faithful. Over little, I will make faithful over much. Yeah. And so there's going to be a reward that comes. And so it's just so important how we live our life. And I think that having the hope of heaven is so good. And it's the trials that prepare us, that build the endurance that we're going to need to get us ready for heaven. Ready. God, that's what God uses to shape us.
Yeah.
And, Romans 5, maybe I'll read in a second, but I think Diane's dying to say something right now.
Oh, no. I just remember having a conversation with my dad. He had been diagnosed with a terminal illness, and he was really seriously studying about heaven. And he had listened to a 3-part sermon series that Joe Mark had given about the new heaven and the new earth and coming. And we were sitting on a big granite rock outcropping high in the Sierras, about 8,000 feet probably at Spicer Reservoir.
Yeah.
We kayaked out to it and we were sitting on top and we were just kind of having fun filling in the spaces that scripture is not clear about. Wondering if we get to be, my dad was just a worker. He loved to work. And so the idea of not working in heaven wasn't real appealing to him.
Sure.
And so he was dreaming about, I wonder if we get to be part of the process of restoring creation. And we agreed that if that was the case, we were going to meet up in the High Sierras. He and I were going to meet up in the High Sierras and we wanted to do some restoring there. And it was this joyful moment while he was facing a real sobering prognosis of this is not the end.
Yes.
We have exciting, pleasurable experiences for all eternity. And we can't even imagine what those are. And when we try to, we're just filling in blanks of things we don't know about, like whether we get to restore the Sierras. Mm. But I think it's important to keep our eyes there, just realizing if this life is all there is, we're doomed to disappointment.
Yes.
Yeah, we started off talking about disappointment. And in Romans 5, verse 5, says, hope does not disappoint. But that's the end of a sentence. It says, we joy in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance, and perseverance proving character, and proving character, hope. And hope does not disappoint. Here's why. Mm. Because the love of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who was given to us while we were helpless. Mm. Mm-hmm. Christ died for the ungodly. So he came and it's all about him. And I think when our hope is in him, it doesn't disappoint.
No.
Because really when our hope is in him, he's given us eternal life. And that life is now. Eternal life is now. It's not just one day.
Yes.
And it's one day as well.
And there's so much theology packed into that, which we can get into another time, but there's so much good there.
But hope. It's key word.
The last two, even thinking about hope, daily surrender. The Bible talks all over the place. Die to self. The reality that death actually leads to life in God's kingdom. Mm-hmm. Paul says, I die daily, right? So there's a principle in there for us that when you make life all about you and all about your pleasure, the pleasure principle, there is disappointment.
Yeah.
I mean, it ramps up the problem. It ramps up the pain. Mm-hmm. And so just taking a second to daily surrender, choosing those things to surrender, I think is huge. And then lastly, we can talk about both of them, but lastly is to choose to notice. Choose to notice what good is going on. Choose the perspective that God is, that you're actually sitting in right now. So what are the things that you can notice? Because there's good things going around, but you do have to choose to notice. You have to choose to take that time perspective. A couple more thoughts before we're done.
I just love the last one.
That's because you came up with it.
Well, yeah, I guess I did.
That's because that was your point.
We were having an interesting conversation about, well, maybe Mom, you explain what you were saying and my pushback to you a little bit with it, with the choosing how you feel.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So I was saying, I still think we can choose how we feel about things. And that kind of sparked a little bit of a, not really even disagreement, but just maybe a wording disagreement. But I do believe that we can choose a lot about how we feel about things. Like, for instance, we can choose when our children are little and they're really demanding and it's hard to complain about it and feel resented. Mm-hmm. Or we can choose to absolutely delight in our kids. Like our daughter, Rebecca, has a 3-month-old right now, not quite 3-month-old. And she is in the middle of a real stressful time in their life and business and work. And yet when I talk to her, I'm not hearing her complain about how a baby has made this much more complicated. But that's the actual reality is the baby has made this really complicated. Mm-hmm. She's choosing to absolutely delight in Ellis, even while having Ellis in the middle of this work situation is really rough. So that's what I was saying. And you countered with.
Well, I said I agree and I disagree.
Yeah.
A lot of tension over here on the podcast today.
I don't know. I'm smiling.
I think that I've heard it said before, speaking of more of like the perfectionistic type, like I tend to mm-hmm. notice everything that's wrong. I can't help but notice the dust on the baseboards when I walk up the stairs, or the fact that they all need to be painted and we need new carpet.
Okay, pause here. I just remember vacuuming and trying not to look at the stained carpet while I was vacuuming. Yeah. So I know the struggle.
Yes. I can't help the fact that I see that. I can't help the fact that I notice that.
Right.
And lots of other people would walk up the stairs and never notice that. No. I see it every single time I walk up the stairs.
And you're never going to be able to train yourself not to see it.
No.
Yes, I agree.
But what I can choose is what I do with what I see.
Yeah.
So I can walk up the stairs and I can be angry that the kids should be helping out more and that I should have taught them chores better and that, you know, whatever. I'm angry that I can't physically do all the painting right now because of my back. Like I can walk up the stairs and let my mind run with all of that. Or I can walk up the stairs and say, yeah, that's frustrating that they're always dirty, but this is the stage of life I'm in right now. And these are the limitations on my physical body and our family, and it's okay. And this is, I'm doing the best that I can.
Right.
Mm. Those are two very different experiences, walking up the stairs.
But wait, that's a minute. A choice. I thought you were disagreeing with me. You're just proving my point. You can choose how you feel every time you walk up those stairs, how you feel
what
about
I do
the fact.
With, what I do with what I feel. That's exactly. The pushback.
We've got a language tension exactly. here.
Or yes. just, yes. But I think I that if it might seem so minute, but like how often does that tension build throughout the day? We're annoyed that our toddler woke us up. We're annoyed that they're demanding breakfast. We're annoyed that the teenager needs yet another ride somewhere. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, or it's a gift that they want to climb into my bed and this is a short season of life. Yeah. And yes, it's an interruption, but I'm going to choose to look at it as a gift. Or it's a gift that my son has really good friends mm-hmm. and I want to foster that. And so I'm going to spend more time in the car than I want to. Yeah. You know, just there's, I think we can choose our perspective.
Yes, there you go. That's better than how we feel. But our feelings then do follow.
They do follow.
That choice.
They absolutely
to
follow.
To some degree at least.
Yeah.
I mean, those stairs are always going to bug you.
Yes.
And someday you're going to have perfect stairs or one story
or
like
not,
us
no or I stairs. Won't
no stairs and I think some of us are always waiting for that next stage when it's going to be easy or for me when it's not going to be so busy or when I'm not going to feel this pressure or and that day
and we're
is
just
probably
grasping at clouds. I mean it's just we're chasing this and I mean maybe a little bit of it is true like we keep saying you know now that our youngest is 5 and we keep being like amazed at how we are really in a different stage.
Yeah.
Like this is the stage we were looking forward to in many ways.
Years.
Like, but, and yet it comes with a whole new set of challenges mm-hmm. and parenting is just very different and harder in certain ways. And yet we feel better suited for it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think some of it can be true. Sometimes just certain seasons are really hard, but it's not like when you get to the next one, all your problems are gone. You just have new problems. Like the scripture about don't worry about tomorrow because tomorrow has enough trouble of its own, which is so funny. I love that that's in the Bible because it's 100% true, you know? But I think, perspective is everything. And I think perspective, especially when it comes to disappointment or suffering of any kind, is the difference between sinking or swimming.
Yep.
You know, it really, really is.
Well, whether you are married, you have young kids, old kids, wherever you're at, I think it's important to remember these principles today and moving from that pleasure principle to maturity and the invitation that Jesus gives us. And so Phil and Diane and Elizabeth, thank you for all of your wisdom and the scriptures shared. And we'll have all the lists and all the 4 things in the show notes. Thank you for listening.